We're recapping the Democratic National Convention, gathering your thoughts on the week that was largely virtual, with Milwaukee mostly hosting in spirit. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Last night, the fourth and final day, brought presidential nominee Joe Biden's acceptance speech and remarks from more party luminaries. We'll hear voices from the week throughout the hour, starting with Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett's address Tuesday on the virtual nature of the convention.
These are not conventional times. And as a result, as we all know, this is not a conventional convention. And as much as we would have loved to host you in person, I am proud that the Democratic Party and the City of Milwaukee have made the health of our residents our number one priority.
Did you watch the DNC? What are your takeaways? We're at 800-642-1234. Sean Johnson is WPR's Capital Bureau Chief, co-host of the WPR Politics Podcast. Sean, welcome back.
Good morning.
And Mary Spacuzza is an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She has a background in covering both local and state government. Mary, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
So, Mary, let's start with you. You've been covering the convention from Milwaukee this week. What was the atmosphere like downtown?
Gosh, the atmosphere downtown was very quiet. There were days where I felt like I was one of the only people downtown. Sometimes I'd look at the Giannis poster just to see a familiar face. It was lonely, I'm going to say. The protests were, by and large, very small. The largest one was last night. I did not see that because I was out at the zoo. But I will say I saw more ACLU legal observers than I did protesters the other nights of the week. So it really kind of felt almost like a ghost town in some ways. I did see some reporters and Secret Service and some sources, but not many.
What have you heard from residents and business owners who were planning for this event for months, for, you know, looking forward to it and maybe had really big monetary stakes in it?
I think this was kind of a gut punch in some ways. Obviously, we're in the middle of a pandemic and public safety has to be the priority. That said, I think last night, I know some sources who saw the fireworks going off in Delaware and the crowds gathered in the streets at the watch party there. And it looked like they were having a big party. And to see some of the hotels there talking about, or the hotels and tourism industry, to say how this has been a shot in the arm for them economically, I think is hard for Milwaukee to take right now, because we've also been battered by the pandemic. And obviously we're expecting tens of millions of dollars in economic benefits when this was first announced back in early 2019. And now obviously it's going to be a fraction of that. So I think there's a lot of understanding and a lot of let's make the best of this. And we're Milwaukee, so we have a sense of humor and we've been down before. But I do think this was a hard week in some ways.
Sean, did the convention have a Wisconsin feel to it from your vantage point?
Yeah, so my vantage point was basically like everybody who was not in Milwaukee. You know, I watched it on TV, or I watched it on my laptop, to be more specific. From that vantage point, no. I mean, it did not have a real Wisconsin feel to it. There were Wisconsin speakers on occasional nights with brief speeches. Tammy Baldwin's was the longest last night. But this is not an event that showcased Wisconsin. It was an event that showcased the Democratic Party, showcased Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, and the ticket. But, you know, the Wisconsin portions of it were, you know, very, very virtual, I guess you'd say. They were kind of in a sanitized type studio environment, not out on the street or at a landmark or something like that.
And Sean, you're used to covering these conventions where you don't sleep at all for a week and you just go around the clock. So this must have felt very different.
It was, from my vantage point, a lot different. Yeah. I mean, they still had Wisconsin delegation, quote, breakfasts in the morning, you know, where Wisconsin Democrats would meet via Zoom, and they got some national speakers like Nancy Pelosi yesterday, Eric Holder, Bernie Sanders spoke to Wisconsin Democrats. They did manage to get some good Zoom guests. at those delegation breakfasts, but a lot different than what we're used to at these conventions.
We're talking with Sean Johnson and Mary Spicuzza, cover government and politics in Wisconsin. We're recapping this week's Democratic National Convention. Taking your takeaways, your insights, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Jack now in Caledonia. Hi, Jack. What were your takeaways?
Good morning. Yeah, I watched, you know, quite a bit of it. I didn't watch it all, but I watched quite a bit of it. And I look at it as a like a job interview. Okay, somebody comes in and they tell you what they're going to do, and they all they say is we're going to make it better. I'm going to do, you know, and they don't tell you how they're going to do it better. I think all the speakers were missing something of substance. I thought there was a lot of misinformation, a lot of bias comments.
Where did you find the misinformation and bias?
Well,
speak to
okay,
that a
simple,
little bit.
Okay, just simple thing about move by President Trump, Postmaster General, you know, to remove equipment. Okay, this stuff was already planned. This wasn't something that was, you know, he got in, he says, I'm going to, you know, move all this equipment. This stuff is already planned months in advance, and he was just following through with it. And the reason he did it was for cost savings. All right, it's not to you know, mess up with the votes. It's not, you know, to do any of that. But that's not how it's, you know, projected. Okay, so what he came out and said, he said, okay, we're not going to make any of the changes, even though it's going to save, you know, taxpayers money. We're going to wait till after the election to do it.
All right. And Jack, I'm going to pause here and let Mary jump in here. Did you find that substance was lacking in some of these speeches? And what was the framework around how the speakers talked about the post office issues?
I think a lot of the framing around that was really very much, you know, there's obviously a partisan lens. It's the Democratic National Convention. I think a lot of the convention was trying to contrast how Joe Biden would lead compared to the current president. I think that there is a real concern from people who are nervous about voting in the middle of a pandemic, that they want to be able to vote by mail. It's obviously been hugely popular in Wisconsin and elsewhere. And I think that people really want to make sure their voices are heard and their ballots are counted. So I don't know. I think it's more concern and questions about what's going on with the Postal Service right now and wanting to make sure that their ballots won't be lost or set aside, as we saw in April, where there were concerns of like bins of ballots being found in one post office that was supposed to be going somewhere else, or post, you know, ballots in Fox Point being returned. So I think that people are nervous after what we saw in April and don't want a repeat of that.
Sean, where did you see more of the substance come out, or did any of the speakers have enough time to get into specifics?
I don't know that you would necessarily look to a political convention for substance and policy. It's not typically the place to go looking for it. You know, I will say that like some of the speeches were shorter in this format than they might have been in an in-person convention. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Bill Clinton, when he has spoken at in-person conventions, he likes to weave policy in and out of his speeches, and he likes to go on at length. And he had a very short speech at this convention. So that's just kind of one example of a person who might have gone policy heavy in his speech was limited to a pretty short speech over a virtual format.
We have the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel investigative reporter Mary Spicuzza, WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson there, our guides to the week that was of the DNC. Here's South Carolina Representative Jim Clyburn on Monday.
We need a president who understands both profound loss and what it takes to bounce back. But more important than his firsthand experience with loss and hardship is his ability to translate that perspective into policy and solutions.
Bring your DNC reflections on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're spending the hour recapping the Democratic National Convention, gathering your thoughts on the four-day affair that was largely virtual, but technically in Milwaukee. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're bringing you voices from the week. Here's Ohio Governor John Kasich Monday night, reaching out to moderate voters and the
GOP. I'm a lifelong Republican, but that attachment holds second place to my responsibility to my country. That's why I've chosen to appear at this convention. In normal times, something like this would probably never happen. But these are not normal times.
What messages did you think were strong? Where was it lacking on substance? What did you disagree with? Did the virtual setup generate excitement for you? We're at 800-642-1234. We have Milwaukee Journal Sentinel investigative reporter Mary Spacuzza and WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson, who stay with us. Let's bring in another call now. Vern in Monroe. Hi, Vern.
Hello.
Hi.
I watched the whole convention, and I think that's important. What I felt was the most important issue was when President Obama talked about the fact that what a great vice president President Biden was.
So, Vern, that was a moment for you. And, you know, Sean here, a wall-to-wall convention watcher, and Obama's speech standing out. What did you make of that speech?
I think that was a pretty widely shared sentiment that you know, President Obama, who's kind of known for his speeches, kind of brought it at this convention. I saw a number of people say that he may have overshadowed Kamala Harris, who spoke immediately after him. Vern kind of referenced it there, how Obama talked about Joe Biden being a great vice president. A lot of these conventions are about building up the nominee. And in a race like this, especially where so much of other race hinges around whether voters are for or against Donald Trump, there are a lot of voters who haven't necessarily given much consideration to Joe Biden. Maybe he wasn't their first pick if they're a Democrat in the Democratic, you know, presidential nominating contest. Or maybe it's been quite a year in 2020 and they haven't necessarily thought about his biographical background. So that's a big part of these conventions. And, you know, you did see that from a number of the speeches as this went on.
Well, let's listen to former President Barack Obama, who spoke and emphasized the importance of democracy and civic responsibility.
Democracy was never meant to be transactional. You give me your vote, I make everything better. It requires an active and informed citizenry. So I'm also asking you to believe in your own ability, to embrace your own responsibility as citizens, to make sure that the basic tenets of our democracy endure.
Mary, what was your takeaway there from Obama's speech?
I think President Obama obviously is a very gifted public speaker. His speech stood out. I feel bad for anyone who has to speak after either of the Obamas, frankly. That it seems like a tough gig. I think Michelle Obama's speech was moved a lot of people, obviously stirred a lot of supporters. Both of them are quite formidable public speakers, and I can't think of the last time that two gifted public speakers like that were married to each other. So it'll be interesting to see when that ever happens again. But I think his speech was quite powerful. And some people were saying it was a little darker or less optimistic than when he first broke through with his convention speech. But I think it also very, very much ended on an optimistic note. And he really tried to stress, I think, that he believes his vice president, Joe Biden, would be different and lead to a different future for the country.
Well, let's hear a little bit from former First Lady Michelle Obama, who gave a speech Monday night, and let's listen to her tone and message.
4 years ago, too many people chose to believe that their votes didn't matter. Maybe they were fed up. Maybe they thought the outcome wouldn't be close. Maybe the barriers felt too steep, whatever the reason. In the end, those choices sent someone to the Oval Office who lost the national popular vote by nearly 3 million votes.
Okay, so Sean, voting was certainly came up as a steady mantra during this convention. What did you hear there?
Yeah, Michelle Obama had a necklace that said vote that night, didn't she? This was definitely a refrain for Democrats who, I think, generally speaking, feel like that if they can turn out their voters, they will win. You know, in a state like Wisconsin, we hear this every election, really, that the Democratic vote is there to win a statewide election. Just got to motivate Democrats, especially in Milwaukee, to turn out and vote. So if it felt like you were getting hit over the head with that quite a bit during the convention, it's because you were. I mean, that is a huge focus for them this November and really ahead of November, because they keep pushing people who want to vote absentee to get out and do it as soon as they can.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with WPR's Sean Johnson and Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Mary Spicuzza. They've been watching, listening, reporting on this week's Democratic National Convention, and they're here to walk us through the themes, the speeches, and of course, our lines are open for your reflections. Did you watch this week's convention? What did you think? 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Saul now in Stevens Point. Hi, Saul.
Good morning, Kate, John. Two things. One, I thought Tammy Duckworth's talk, which, by the way, was almost I didn't get to hear it when I was listening to NPR because they were yakking about some kind of analysis. Anyway, I thought that was the most effective speech about the mess that the president has put the military in when she called him the coward in chief. I thought it was a very powerful speech. I'd like to put in a plug for the county clerks. They really need to be able to count these mail-in ballots as they come in, not after the polls have closed.
Saul, thank you for the call. Sean, I want to pose this to you. What did you hear out of Senator Duckworth's speech?
I will be totally frank here. I was covering the Elections Commission last night while I was watching this the convention in another monitor. So I missed Tammy Duckworth's speech last night, and I'm not going to comment on it.
Mary, I'm going to toss this one to you.
Sure. I was at the Zoo Watch party for her speech. You know, obviously her personal experience is very powerful. She's able to speak to serving, to being injured, to what that was like personally. So I do think that's a powerful message when someone can weave in a really compelling, powerful personal story with a policy message. And, you know, President Trump has not served in the military. The senator has, and was able to draw that comparison. So I think that coward in chief message was, hit harder coming from someone like her. So I do think that she did deliver quite a moving speech.
I want to move over here to Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, the progressive who also ran for the Democratic nomination, also rallied around Biden. Let's hear some of that.
He has tried to prevent people from voting, undermined the U.S. Postal Service, deployed the military and federal agents against peaceful protesters, threatened to delay the election, and suggested that he will not leave office if he loses. This is not normal, and we must never treat it like it is.
So, Sean, you know, Biden has been considered an old school Democrat, first elected to the Senate in 72. The world has changed a lot. Is Biden able to connect with the progressive wing of the party?
I think there was maybe some doubt about that when he was running in a crowded Democratic field. But I think the progressive party, the progressive wing of the party has come to Joe Biden in a very big way since then. I mean, if you compare and contrast what Bernie Sanders is saying about Joe Biden here and kind of generally where Democrats are in 2020 versus 2016, when at an in-person convention, you knew there was some dissension out there, right? Because you could see it and you could hear it among the delegates who were in the convention hall at the convention that nominated Hillary Clinton. You're not seeing that. You're not hearing that from Bernie Sanders, who's kind of a standard bearer for the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. So they're definitely maybe Sanders voters out there who feel differently. But Bernie Sanders himself is out there in kind of at every opportunity he gets saying good things about Joe Biden.
We're looking back at the four-day Democratic National Convention and the speeches, highlights. Sean Johnson there, WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief. We have Mary Spicuzza, an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Democrats encouraged voting and stressed the importance of unity. Here is Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
Democrats must take back the Senate. We will stay united from Sanders and Warren to Manchin and Warner. And with our unity, we will bring bold and dramatic change to our country.
Did you follow the convention? What speeches stood out? Do you think national party conventions are a thing of the past? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll be back for more talk about the DNC. Look ahead to the RNC next week, right after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're recapping the Democratic National Convention this hour, gathering your takeaways on the four nights of speeches that were largely virtual, but Milwaukee retained its host city status. We've compiled moments from speeches. Here's former Secretary of State and 2016 Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton Wednesday night urging Americans to vote in November.
For 4 years, people have told me, I didn't realize how dangerous he was. I wish I could do it all over. Or worse, I should have voted. Look, this can't be another woulda, coulda, shoulda election.
Did you catch some of the speeches? What stood out? Were the speeches a call to action? Did they make you want to vote? What messages hit home? What missed the mark? Join in 800-642-1234. Our guides are Mary Spicuzza, an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and Sean Johnson, WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief. Mary, we heard from Hillary Clinton there urging people to vote. How did the act of voting emerge as this major theme throughout the week?
I think there's been a lot of talk, for one, about 2016 and what happened in Wisconsin and Milwaukee. Obviously, Hillary Clinton didn't come here during the lead up to the general election. She only came before the primary. She did not win Wisconsin as expected. And I think a lot of people here felt like maybe Democrats were taking their votes for granted. Turnout dropped in places like Milwaukee, although Milwaukee should not be held, solely responsible for that. But I think that a lot of people we heard this week say the road to the White House goes right through Wisconsin. Turnout is going to be crucial. And if Democrats in places like Wisconsin can't get people to vote, then it's very likely Donald Trump could win Wisconsin again, just like he did 4 years ago. Obviously, it's a different situation with the coronavirus pandemic, where Joe Biden is trying to do more virtual events and try to, say that he, unlike Donald Trump, doesn't want to put people at risk. But I do think that voting in places like Wisconsin, we're going to hear a lot about it. And a lot of Democrats are concerned that if voters don't turn out, they won't win here or win the presidency.
Sean, President Trump and Vice President Pence, they were both in Wisconsin this week. How did the administration's presence in our state affect the convention and media coverage?
I don't know that it affected the convention exactly, but okay. In terms of media coverage, if you are from Wisconsin, you did not see as much coverage of a Wisconsin convention as you would have, of course. And there were stories every day or for three of the days this week about the Trump campaign coming to Wisconsin. President Trump was here Monday. Eric Trump was here Tuesday. Mike Pence was here Wednesday. So they saw this opening and they were not, subtle about it. They kind of said it every turn. Hey, where are Democrats? They were supposed to be here, but we're here for you. So they looked at it as an opening. You did see a definite contrast there, too, between how the parties view campaigning in the age of COVID-19. Democrats really emphasized the virtual convention whereas the Republican events were in person. The Mike Pence event in particular was held indoors. People were pretty crowded, it looked like, from the pictures from our colleague Laurel White, and there were free masks available, and most people didn't wear them.
Sean, how did the coronavirus pandemic factor into the messages of the week?
I kind of think that the fact that the convention was virtual was part of the message.
Okay.
You know, because the Democrats repeatedly said, we'd love to gather in person, but we can't because of the COVID-19 pandemic and we need to be safe. They would kind of go on, or if they didn't, the message was, unlike Donald Trump and his administration, you know, they want to contrast themselves as the party who's taking the pandemic more seriously than Republicans. So, you know, to me, that was part of the message. Every time you saw a Democrat at a socially distanced function or wearing a mask, you know, that is definitely meant to send a message.
Mary, you know, during conventions, delegates from all the states cast their votes. It's the roll call, usually happens on the convention floor. How did the DNC deliver the roll call? How did that work?
I think that was one of like the biggest surprise hits of the convention this week was the virtual roll call, where you got to see this virtual tour of the country. And some of it was quite moving. A couple standing in the farm field in Iowa, which has been horribly battered by storms. Then you saw Rhode Island with the calamari chef, who was kind of dressed up as a ninja, being called the calamari comeback state. Seeing Puerto Rico, it was really fun to watch. And I was not the only person who thought so. It sounds like from the convention planners, they were telling us they thought that the convention would be forever changed in terms of how they do their roll call. So, of course, in my mind, I'm thinking of all the places where Wisconsin could show off, because we were in the Wisconsin Center with Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes behind a podium. And obviously nothing against the Lieutenant Governor or the podium, but we've got so many beautiful sights to see around Wisconsin that I think a lot of people are thinking for the roll call next time they would like to highlight something else.
Sean, what was your reaction to seeing so many Americans, you know, everyday people, and the unique roll call?
Yeah, I mean, I'll second Mary on that one. I would say a lot of the virtual convention lacked a little bit of the oomph of hearing somebody speak in a crowd full of fans, basically. You know, it's kind of like a sporting event atmosphere where you don't know what people are going to react to. There's a human element to it, and there's energy when a crowd reacts. So I feel like some of the speeches missed that, but I don't feel like the roll call really missed anything. It was cool to go around the country that way and see each state kind of showcase whatever they wanted, really. So I'm not sure how that would recreate itself at a future convention when, you know, I don't know if Republicans will try something similar at their convention. And, you know, hopefully life is more normal in 4 years. But that was a cool way to do things.
We're recapping this week's Democratic National Convention. If you're just joining us, we have a pair of Wisconsin political reporters, Sean Johnson and Mary Spacuzza, with us. Did you watch the convention, any or all of it? Did you participate? Will you watch the RNC next week? Share with us, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Justin now, joining us from La Crosse. Hi, Justin. What were your thoughts?
My thoughts were, I was curious, for a party that claims to be all-inclusive, why was Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard, who had more delegates than the actual VP or VP nominee Kamala Harris, not invited to the convention?
So, Justin, you wanted to see a speech from Gabbard, or at least have a presence of her in the convention.
Yes, I did. I mean, she's a major progressive voice. And honestly, with what the Democratic Party has done to stifle progressive thought or policy or voice, why she was not included.
Mary, did you see that perhaps as intentional there, not having Tulsi Gabbard in the mix?
You know, honestly, there were so many speakers during the convention week that I did not initially notice her absence. I did see her tweeting that she was not invited to speak or saying that she was not invited to speak. And I would have to, you know, I don't want to guess why that was. I'd have to ask around about it. She obviously did, has clashed with Hillary Clinton, with Kamala Harris and others, but I don't want to guess about why she was or wasn't invited to speak without doing some interviews.
Yeah, and Sean, I would imagine that filling out a roster of who speaks when and who, you know, how it's decided about who will have a presence in the convention, I would imagine that's really complex.
Yeah, because if you give a few minutes to somebody, you're taking it away from someone else is how it's going to be viewed. I mean, we kind of have a Wisconsin-centric perspective on this stuff. And I was watching the clock for how much Wisconsin speakers got compared to other speakers. You know, people notice this stuff. People notice that, for example, Michael Bloomberg got 5 minutes on primetime stage last night to introduce Joe Biden. So it's always trade-offs at a convention.
Well, I want to know. Oh, go ahead, Mary. Oh, yeah.
I definitely heard quite a bit of talk of AOC and the time that AOC got. And obviously some of her supporters felt like she should have gotten more time. I heard more people talking about that than I did about Tulsi. But, you know, I'm sure it depends on what your perspective is and where your politics are.
I want to play a clip of Jill Biden because conventions often introduce the candidate's family to a national audience. Let's hear a bit from the speech of former Second Lady Jill Biden.
I never imagined at the age of 26, I would be asking myself, how do you make a broken family whole? Still, Joe always told the boys, Mommy sent Jill to us. And how could I argue with her?
Mary, help us understand what Jill is saying there.
You know, she did quite a good job of again, bringing in the personal with the politics and talking about how Joe Biden's first wife was killed tragically along with his baby in a car crash. You know, the boys were injured. And she married Joe when he had the boys and was a widower. So I think she was drawing that comparison of that she and Joe Biden put together a broken family and that they can heal what a lot of people feel is a broken country right now. And I think that she actually did a very good job of showing a personal side of Joe Biden and using that to reflect what kind of leader she believes he would be.
We have Mary Spicuzza and Sean Johnson with us. Let's hear another voice from the convention. You'll recognize this one, Governor Tony Evers.
This November is about returning kindness, respect, empathy, and civility back to the White House. And that's who Joe and Kamala are.
How would you describe this convention? 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's hear another moment from the Democratic National Convention as we spend the hour recapping the 4 days that wrapped up last night with Joe Biden accepting the party's nomination. Here is former President Barack Obama on Wednesday night speaking on behalf of his Vice President Joe Biden.
For 8 years, Joe was the last one in the room whenever I faced a big decision. He made me a better president. And he's got the character and the experience to make us a better country.
What moment stood out to you? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. WPR Sean Johnson and Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Mary Spicuzza. Stay with us. Let's bring in another call now. Logan joining us from Green Bay. Hi, Logan. What did you think of the DNC?
I feel that they should have included Pence in the criticism. Because Trump and Pence go as a pair, and Trump Mr. Pence has the effrontery to attack the Chief Justice, and yet he has allowed the swamp to grow. And I feel that they should have attacked Trump and contrast him with Harris. I feel that he's one of the weakest vice presidents that we ever had.
So Logan is saying here that Vice President Mike Pence wasn't mentioned in speeches as much and has really fallen back on the role of the vice president. Sean, what is your take on how President Trump and the vice president were framed in these speeches?
I think that President Trump is just such a polarizing figure. I mean, his base just truly loves him, and the Democratic base can't stand him. And he's a big personality. He's out there on a daily basis. He tweets so many controversial things that, there's not even time to cover them all. Right. So, I mean, that is why Mike Pence doesn't get mentioned, is because he is not that personality. He's kind of the antithesis to that personality. And so he gets overlooked at a convention and an election, which is very much about Donald Trump.
Let's bring in Saeed now in Green Bay, who watched all four nights, I understand, Saeed?
Yes, I did. And thank you very much for taking my call. I did watch all four nights, and I was left at the end feeling like I was at the end of a very long infomercial. Meaning that I was listening to see what my life would be like, and what if Joe Biden wins the election. And unfortunately, there was knowing that the biggest contender to Joe Biden was Bernie Sanders, and that the influence and impact of the left wing of the Democratic Party is going to be significant. They were absent in presentations. We heard more from disaffected Republicans than we did from people who are going to have significant influence over the policies that will follow. I like Joe Biden more personally as an individual from all the stories that were told. But that is not what I'm going to vote on. What I'm going to vote on is in a slate of ideas, the policies that will impact the lives of American citizens. And I am no more informed at the end of four nights of what that is.
Saeed, thanks. Mary, one long infomercial, Saeed's saying, and we heard more from disaffected Republicans. What do you make of that?
I think that they avoided one question, which was like, is somebody going to be muted? Will there be a lost connection? I think that they avoided like any real tragic mistakes of how a virtual convention could go awry, of like somebody tripping on a cord and losing power. That said, like, I think some of us have screen fatigue after months of Zoom calls and seeing people in badly lit in their living rooms. And so I do think that Democrats had a obstacle there of like, how do you make 8 hours of a virtual convention when there aren't the cheers and the organic crowd noise really compelling? I think that the watch parties helped a little bit last night because you could hear crowd reaction, even if they weren't in a room. They were honking in Milwaukee. We didn't get fireworks, but we did get they got glow sticks and they got flags to wave, and you could hear them cheering. But I do think it's not going to be the same as an in-person convention. In terms of an infomercial, I think that the message was, they wanted to stress that Joe Biden is a very different person than Donald Trump. And, that message probably got repeated quite a bit. But I do think that there were certain things they wanted to hit home, and that's probably why we heard them over and over again. But I don't know that that's really unique to a virtual convention, because that does happen a lot at in-person conventions where there's a message they're going to repeat. And at this one, it was, vote. Joe Biden is different than President Trump. He's the person that's needed to get us out of the pandemic. And I think we're going to keep hearing those until November, honestly.
I'm wondering, Sean, though, did the Democratic Party show off a unified party? Was that on display? Because, one advantage, if you will, of a virtual convention is that the boos aren't magnified.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a delegate who steadfastly supports Bernie Sanders and you want to make your voice heard when it comes to convention, you can't just show up and shout and get attention. or, you know, remember, Donald Trump had very nearly a contested convention in Cleveland 4 years ago. He had Ted Cruz supporters and Donald Trump supporters yelling at each other at that convention. Stuff like that can't happen when it's all recorded. It's just one person in a room or they're produced videos. It takes all that away.
Let's bring in Margie now in Milwaukee. Hi, Margie. What did you think?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I loved the virtual convention. I hope they never go back to the trashy, loud, ineffective in-person one. It was personal. It was, you know, they were talking to me. I could listen. I could hear their extended thoughts. Nobody can hear stuff in the in-person convention. And I disagree with the previous guy that called about policies. What policies does Trump have? He doesn't go into anything. What I think the convention this time was all about was displaying the man. And I think knowing what kind of person Biden is versus the kind of person Trump is tells a lot. And it was just overwhelming. And if you're really into policies, you can go to the website. He has very detailed policies.
Margie, thanks. Let's bring in Chris in Madison with thoughts. Chris, hi.
Hi, I have one particular kvetch, and I listened to this on NPR. I think one of the three highlights yesterday was a 13-year-old boy with a stutter giving a speech. I thought that was incredibly brave. And when it was over, the commentators say, well, that was nice. Now let's talk about the big shots. I think that was one of the three highlights, and he was incredibly shortchanged.
Chris, thanks. So Margie spoke about accessibility. Mary, Chris there, the moment with a 13-year-old boy. And so what was your single highlight, if you will? What is something you'll remember about the DNC this year?
I will definitely remember the 13-year-old boy. I will remember Michelle Obama's speech and President Obama's speech. I will definitely remember, I think Joe Biden exceeded expectations. But I think, if I'm being honest, as a Milwaukee native, I think this convention is going to sting for a while just of how much Milwaukee lost out.
Sean, what will you remember?
Yeah, as far as speeches go, I would say President Obama's probably. I would say, you know, Joe Biden's close was memorable. I agree that 13-year-old boy is very brave. Probably the fireworks, seeing the fireworks in Delaware was a little bit jarring too, because we sort of accepted that it was a virtual convention, wasn't going to be in Milwaukee this year. But it sure looked like a convention there at the end in Delaware. I know it wasn't quite the same thing, but there were people gathered. And so, you know, that might be something that we remember.
Thank you both for joining us.
I felt like the nerd who got invited, like as a joke, to the wrong party while all the cool kids went to the real food.
Oh, Mary Spacuzza, investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Sean Johnson, WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief. Thank you both. Join us next week as we recap the Republican National Convention. Just ahead, it is On Point. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.